From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of March 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And at the bottom of the half hour, we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, we'll update grain stocks numbers with Daryl Good, both for soybeans and for corn, what's expected at least on the 31st day of March. We'll hear from Gary Schnitke about tomorrow's webinar that's looking forward to crop revenues in Illinois. You can sign up for that one. We'll have all the details, and I'll have an update on all the ag news for the afternoon right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's check the numbers now as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. Nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat, that would be the May at $6.92.5, up 18. July at $6.95.5, 17 and a quarter higher. The hard red July at $7.59.5, 21 cents higher. March corn futures a gain today, up 7 and a quarter cents at $4.86.25 on the settlement. July at $4.91, up 7. September at $4.88.75, 6 and a quarter higher in December corn. $4.87.75 a bushel, 5 3/4 higher. May futures of next year at $5.01.5, up 5 1/4. Bean meal futures $14.18 1/4, up 26 1/2. July at $13.95 3/4, 20 1/2 cents higher. August at $13.48 1/4, up 11 3/4. And September soybeans $12.46 1/2, up 12. November $11.84 1/2, up 8 3/4. In January of 2015 at $11.89. up 9 1/4 cents. Bean meal at $4.55.89, 20 higher. Bean oil at $42.27, 38 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the April at $145.70, up 67 1/2 cents. June at $138.35, 37 1/2 higher. March feeders were down 62 1/2 at $174.12 1/2, and the April contract in the feeder cattle at $176.90 per 100 pounds, $1.07 1/2 cents higher. April hogs were up $1.52 1/2 at $123.22 1/2, and the May futures in the lean hogs at $126.80 were $1 and a nickel higher. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, April at $99.53 a barrel, up $1.54, or rather up $1.46. The RBOB gasoline in the April contract at $2.90, a penny and 9 cents higher. And ethanol futures at $2.57, or 12 and 7 tenths of a cent higher for the day. The RBOB to ethanol spread is just now 33 1/10 cents. That's a dime and 6 1/10 cents narrower than it was yesterday afternoon. Natural gas at $4.46 1/8, down 6 1/8 cents. And diesel fuel for the day at $2.91. That's up 2 cents. Gold futures finished at $13.59, down $13.90. And the U.S. dollar at 79.4. That's up 0.02 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. This afternoon, becoming partly sunny. It'll be milder today with a high in the mid-50s for the afternoon. And then for the evening, a chance of showers, likely some isolated thunderstorms, too. Those will come after midnight. Not as cool. Lows in the mid-40s tonight. Breezy southwest winds at 15 to 20 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall set at 70% tonight, and then tomorrow mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers. Highs in the upper 40s, temperatures will be steady to slowly falling into the afternoon. Windy with west winds at 20 to 25 miles an hour. They could gust all the way to 40 tomorrow, and then by the time we get tomorrow evening, it'll be blustery, partly cold, cloudy, lows of a 30 degree, and west winds at 15 to 20 miles an hour. Thursday, sunny skies in 50s, partly cloudy on Thursday night and 30s. Friday, partly sunny and in the 60s. And Friday night, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of rain showers, a low in the mid-30s. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It is a Tuesday afternoon. This is the 18th day of March 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
A nice little march higher in Chicago today.
Quite a turnaround Tuesday here today. Yes, it was.
Why was it precipitated?
Why was it precipitated? We saw improving crush margins in the soybean market a little bit that way. We saw slow farmer sales. The processors, we saw Decatur kicked up their basis bid yesterday on some offers. And the meal premiums got a little better in South America. And we're not seeing much Argentine sales as such. And we just aren't seeing any Chinese cancellations yet that we were expecting for the first during the first 3 months of the year. So that coupled together with running some technical points along the way got things roaring in a sort of a lightly traded market. The volume wasn't quite as heavy as usual for this big a move, but we did see quite a move in the beans.
So why wasn't it not as heavy, do you think?
Well, I think that partially we've got people that are staying back out of the market a little bit because of the March 31st reports. A lot of big reports out that day that could be changers. And you've got another group that's staying out because of just the fear of what may or may not develop in the Ukraine and Russia situation and what sanctions might be thrown on, too. So, it didn't take quite as many buy orders today to move the market up as it might have had everybody been there in full participation.
What kind of concerns do we have out of Ukraine at the moment other than the export market? I think maybe there is some concern that, about 20% of the crop, wheat crop, that is, and I suppose corn, too, might not get planted, that depending on what the financial situation looks like.
You know, that's depending on financing, also getting moving in place some of the things that way. I don't think their agriculture is really slowing down at this point in time, and I don't think Russia, of course, is getting any way to bottleneck things. Not really seeing why it's going to be as big a problem other than financing and, you know, what is going on in that respect. We did see that Egypt did their tender today. They went with the U.S. wheat rather than probably the cheaper Black Sea wheat. So they are, the international traders are staying a little bit away from there for reliability factors.
Your crop insurance sign-up has ended as you were talking with producers and they signed up. Did they give you any indication of which crops they were more likely to plant and whether they'll put more bean or corn acres in?
I think that we saw a slight switch to beans. The guys that are in their 50-50 rotations, so basically flip fields every year, they're pretty much staying where they were at. Some of the guys that were a very high percentage of corn are probably going to be planting probably a third beans this year. So we did see a little bit of a pickup in bean acres in our area.
And as you look forward to the rest of the week, what are your concerns about the marketplace?
Well, I think basically, you know, as we look here, are we going to stay above $14 or below $14 as we get closer to the report? Are we going to punch through that $5 mark on the corn? And if we do, will we hold it and will we share it on to the next level that way? I think we're at a point of you don't know whether you should buy or sell right here, but you should be doing one of them.
Well, which one do you want to do?
I think I need to be confirmed that we're either going to stay below or go above before I actually make my move.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support local landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise. Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In today's agricultural news, with pig supplies tightening as a result of PEDV, or porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, Reuters has reported Smithfield Foods is reducing slaughter hours at its pork plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina. The slaughter schedule at the nation's largest pork plant was cut from 5 days to four. Steve Meyer with Paragon Economics suggests that operating approach, cutting one day a week, could come to some Midwest plants in May. Sources in the cash hog market say plants owned by Hormel, JBS, and Triumph are all among the Midwestern facilities that plan either to trim daily operations by a couple of hours or eliminate overtime or suspend Saturday slaughter. U of I's Daryl Good says due to the rapid pace of U.S. exports, concerned about the size of the South American harvest and prospects for generally tight stocks at the end of the marketing year, that estimates of the soybean stocks as of March 1st may be more important than usual. USDA will release the estimate March 31st. Good notes anticipating the size of the March 1 stocks estimate starts with USDA's estimates of stocks held on December 1st, plus imports during the quarter. Running numbers on exports and domestic crush, as well as average feed, seed, and residual use during the first half of the 2013-14 marketing year, Good expects the March 1 stocks of 973 million bushels. Of course, the United States Department of Agriculture will release its updated grain stocks report on the 31st day of this month. And finally today, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says he'll try to do the right thing to limit farm payment abuses, but won't tip his hand on the how when it comes to limiting payments only to those actively engaged in farming. It was a farm bill battle reformers Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Nebraska's Jeff Fortenberry lost in House-Senate negotiations, that is, to limit farm payments to just those actively engaged in agriculture. Fortenberry told Vilsack at a recent House Ag Appropriations panel hearing.
I thought this was a good agricultural reform measure. It passed on a bipartisan basis, but we lost. The residue of what is left, though, again, gives you the authority to define actively engaged. There is a General Accountability Office report out. Farm in the Midwest received $400,000 of payments in 2012, organized as a general partnership with six corporations and 11 individual members.
Two of whom, Fortenberry says, apparently lived in South Florida, and one was 88 years old. Vilsack recognized the political problem for farm programs, but was noncommittal on options.
You have raised concerns about situations where the rules have been stretched and creatively utilized, and I think our task is to take a look at what makes sense and what doesn't in the real world, and basically provide credibility and legitimacy to whatever support system we have.
Vilsack vowed to do what he called the right thing on actively engaged, but with disaster aid, ARC, and PLC more pressing farm bill priorities right now, it might be a while, he thinks, before it's known what the right thing might be.
But I think it's important for all of us to explain to our friends in urban and suburban America that support systems are designed to reduce the risk of farming. Farming is an extraordinarily difficult and risky business from a financial perspective because of you have no impact on Mother Nature and you have no impact on some foreign country doing something that creates market havoc. And we enjoy food security in this country and an affordability of food in part because we have reduced the risk and we keep people in the farming business. So we obviously want a program that people believe in.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Now, up next, while we just heard what University of Illinois Ag Economist Darrell Good thinks about the grain stocks number for soybeans due out the 31st day of March, we haven't gone through the corn number. Darrell talked about that last week on his Farm Doc Daily Post. We've got more with him right now. Well, it's been difficult to correctly anticipate quarterly grain stocks estimates in recent years, says Darrell Good. There have been more than a few large surprises reflected in some of the estimates. The estimated corn on hand as of December 1, 2013, for example, was surprisingly small and implied a record 2.426 billion bushels of feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter of the 2013-14 marketing year. That estimate started a price rally that was subsequently augmented by the surprisingly large export sales of corn. March 2014 corn futures increased about 70 cents from January 9th to March 7th, and the University of Illinois Ag Economist says while it's become difficult to anticipate the quarterly stocks estimate, it is useful to calculate the magnitude of stocks that might be considered neutral for corn prices.
A neutral estimate is one that implied that feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the marketing year supported the USDA's forecast of 5.3 billion bushels of use for the entire year. Even that calculation is difficult to make, however. The difficulty stems from the change in the seasonal pattern of feed and residual use that has occurred over the past 7 years.
Here's some history to support Good's assertion. For the 10 years from 1996-97 through 2005-06, feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the marketing year averaged 64% of the marketing year total use, in a range from 62 to 66%. For the four-year period from 06-07 through 2009-10, use during their first half of the marketing year averaged 68% of the total, in a range from 66 to 70%. And during the three-year period from 2010-11 to 12-13, use during the first half of the year averaged 74% of the marketing year total, in a range from 73 to 76%. The increase in feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the marketing year and the sharp decline in use during the last half of the year are difficult to explain, says Good.
Some of the seasonal shift in feed and residual use of corn may be associated with high corn prices and increased feeding of wheat during the summer quarter. The shift in some years may also be associated with early harvest and the resulting shift in calculated feed and residual use from the summer quarter into the fall quarter. If those factors do explain some of the shift, feed and residual use during the fourth quarter of the current marketing year might be larger than in recent years.
This, believes Darrell Good, is because corn prices are low relative to other feed ingredients, particularly wheat, and it appears that the 2014 crop will not be planted and harvested, particularly early in the Midwest. The percentage of feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the current marketing year, then, might be expected to be smaller than the 74% in recent years. The impact of PEDV on the number of hogs fed during the last half of the year, however, could also impact the seasonal pattern of corn feeding. Good thinks the balance sheet should show March 1 corn stocks of 7.147 billion bushels. Given the large amount of uncertainty about the potential seasonal pattern of feed and residual use of corn, a stocks estimate that varied from those calculations, he said, could still support the USDA projection of 5.3 billion bushels of feed and residual use for the year. The market will have to decide if the magnitude of use during the first half of the year is reasonable as a percentage of the USDA's projection for the year, or if the projection will need to be changed. You may read Darrell Good's March 1 Grain Stocks Report calculations on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're probably thinking the meeting season has just about wrapped up, and that's true, but there are a couple of events over the next 24-hour period that you might want to consider. The first one is a Will Ag Outlook marketing panel this evening in Effingham at the County Farm Bureau building there on West Evergreen Avenue. Dave Dickey will host Kim Holzapple of Total Grain Marketing, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson tonight at 7 o'clock in the Effingham County Farm Bureau building. Kim Holzapple, Sherman Newland, and Jackie Vakes, along with Dave Dickey, the sponsor, of course, the Effingham County Farm Bureau. We hope that you can make that event, and if not that one, you might consider tomorrow morning's webinar by ag economist Gary Schnittke. It'll be on the Farm Doc website. Well, not quite, and Gary's here now. He'll help us go through that webinar and what the economics for crop revenue might be in the coming year. First, Gary, tell me about the webinars that you've had. One of them was on crop insurance. How many folks have been attending these? I know Jonathan Kappas, the ag policy specialist, had one. Have they been popular, and how easy are they to use?
We've had three webinars so far. One on crop insurance had over 400 lines call in. We had one led by Jonathan Kappas on the Farm Bill that had over 600 individuals attend, and then a SCO presentation by Nick Paulson that had somewhere over 500 that attended. So we've been pleased with the number of people that have attended these, and so far we think they're pretty easy to attend, that you can register for them, and once you've registered for them on our FarmDoc website, there's a link that's sent to you, and from that link, you can watch the webinar.
You're using an off-the-shelf piece of software to help operate the system.
Yeah, it's called GoToWebinar. It's pretty standard in the industry and works pretty well. After the webinars, we also post the webinars as a YouTube videos, and those links to get there you can get there from our FarmDoc website as well.
So tomorrow morning you'll have a webinar. This one is on what?
Crop economics for 2014. What we're going to do is look at budgets for corn and soybeans across Illinois for the upcoming year, keeping in sync with what prices have been doing recently and what costs have been doing. So we'll talk about upcoming decisions, including the corn soybean decision. Late planning, if it happens, when maybe we should be switching from corn to soybeans. A little bit on preventive planning. And then we'll talk about recalibrating input decisions given these lower prices.
How do people join? Is it too late?
It's not too late. What they need to do is go to our FarmDoc website, farmdoc.illinois.edu. At the very top of the screen, you will see a banner for FarmDoc webinars. Over to the right of it will be a place where you can register. If you register, you will get in and send a link.
And so you need a computer to do this?
Computer to do this.
Computer, a smartphone, an iPad, something that's connected to the Internet.
Something that's connected to the Internet and something that you can listen to, because there'll be voice over Internet, so the voice will come over it. What we essentially do is show slides, and we talk through it. That presentation takes about 30 minutes, and then we take questions for the remainder of the time.
And they'll be able to ask questions out loud, I suppose, if they have a microphone, maybe, but mostly by text?
Well, you mainly limit that to text. There's ways of asking questions through
the interface.
Interface, and then we answer them.
All right. Thanks so much, and good luck tomorrow morning.
Well, thank you, and we invite everybody to join.
That's Gary Schnittke, Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to join his webinar tomorrow morning on crop economic outlooks for 2014, you can visit the FarmDoc Daily website. Once there, you'll see a way to register for the webinar. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
The 25th annual All-Day Ag Outlook Day was a huge success. We want to thank everyone who attended and thank our participating businesses for their support. Bates Commodities, The Andersons, AgriGold, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Horizon, and Strategic Farm Marketing.
It's National Oatmeal Cookie Day. Oats was one of the earliest cereals cultivated by humankind. They were known in ancient China as long ago as 7,000 BC, and in Europe around 3,000 years ago. By the way, oatmeal cookies are the number one non-cereal use for oatmeal, followed by meatloaf and cakes and pies. On this day in agricultural history in 1834, the first U.S. railroad tunnel was completed between Hollidaysburg and Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Driven through slate, the Staple Bend Tunnel was 901 feet long, 25 feet wide, and 21 feet high, and lined throughout with masonry 18 inches thick. In 1853, Rudolf Diesel was born. He invented the internal combustion engine. Diesel threw himself over the rail of an English Channel steamer in 1913 after losing control of his invention and receiving criticism in German engineering journals. In 1863, women rioted in Salisbury, North Carolina, to protest the lack of flour and salt in the Confederacy. And in 1920, Wesley Buscelli was born, an agricultural engineer. His 25 patents includes the farm forage handling machine that has produced the familiar large round hay bales in U.S. fields since the 1960s. He also developed roll-over protective devices for tractors. And while a professor at Iowa State University, he originated the first course in the U.S. on agricultural safety. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, it looks like the weather is trying to stay cold, but I suppose the sun is getting close enough that inevitably we will eventually get warmer.
We will, but I think it's going to be really testing our patience, that's for sure, because everything that we see looking out, not so much in the next 5 to 10 days, but, you know, beyond that, into early April, it is still going to be, more than anything, trending to a pattern where temperatures more often than not are going to be colder than normal. So I don't see yet that springtime warm-up, at least a consistent one.
That's not very good news. Do you look back and find analog years to this one in the historical accounts of weather?
Well, yeah, There's a couple of time periods that has been very interesting to sort of look back. The winters of 1917 and 18, I don't quite remember that one. But going back also to 82 and 83 and 1994, and what we're looking at are the years of 82 and 83 to where the latter end of the winter season and spring was quite stormy, cold, and wet. And we're seeing all indications that that may very well show up here in the last couple of weeks of March and into the first half of April. The same basic major drivers in the weather that caused the winter to be so cold are still in place. So that more than anything points to the continuation of colder than normal temperatures, at least here in the early spring season.
Can you give me some details about what those numbers will look like in the next week across the Midwest and the Great Plains states?
Well, when we look at temperatures overall, we're going to be average anywhere between 4 to 8 degrees Fahrenheit below normal on average on some days. And the only part of the country that we see temperatures at or above normal is in the desert southwest and far west. And so this is covering the whole United States from the Rockies east.
We'll turn your attention to South America now in the southern hemisphere. They're in the midst of their harvesting season. How's it going?
Well, right now, not bad. Conditions aren't looking all that bad, although we might have a little bit of weather in Brazil that could cause a few problems with maybe a little bit of precipitation. But overall, there's no glaring things right now that would show any major harvest delays.
How is the winter wheat crop in the northern hemisphere, Europe, and other places faring this time around?
Well, I think it's hard to broad brush all of Europe and some of those winter wheat areas because there's been different weather across the board. If you look at Europe has been able to escape this winter without any real severe cold. Of course, you heard about all the flooding. So moisture is not a problem in some areas of Western Europe. Eastern Europe has been colder, a little bit more wintry, and precipitation, though, hasn't been as good.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to join Dave tonight in Effingham if you have the ability to make that particular meeting. And I'll be up this afternoon taking a look at some brand new equipment that may save a few lives in bins. We'll talk more about that tomorrow on the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.